listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Welcome back to another episode of the Miles to Go podcast, where we bring you the latest travel news, tips, and tricks each week to help you save money and travel better. Hey, I hope you'll take a moment and recommend the show to a friend. We'd love it if you do that, as well as subscribe and rate the podcast wherever you're listening, like Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts. If there's a guest you'd like to see appear on the show, you can email me, ed@pizzainmotion.com. Also a great place to send your questions so we can answer them on a future episode. And you can find me on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all at Pizza in Motion. So what's on tap this week? Well, we've got Summer back from Mommy Points to talk about her family's first cruise on a Disney ship. They actually took the same itinerary that my family took recently, so it's going to be interesting to compare notes with her now that we're both back on the ground. Jen is back to talk about the new Hilton promo that you're probably going to want to sign up for, especially if you're a road warrior. Before we get into that stuff, it's also important to note that Daily Getaways are back underway. Now, Daily Getaways, if you're not familiar, are an effort by the U.S. Travel Association. They used to be more lucrative than they are right now, but they're still pretty valuable in certain bits and pieces. For example, we reported on the IHG promo that was for sale on Monday. We're releasing the episode on Wednesday. I'm recording this on Tuesday, and some of those IHG offers are still available to purchase. I'm not a huge proponent of purchasing points, but I did find a couple of examples where it can save you a bunch of money, especially if you hold the IHG Rewards credit card and you're using the fourth night free option. So a great example of how you can stack for success. There are some other points purchasing opportunities. Again, buyer beware. For example, today, the day that our episode is dropping on Wednesday, May 8th, we've got a Wyndham Rewards purchase points offer. Now, if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you'll remember a segment we did a few weeks ago where Jen and I talked about the changes that Wyndham Rewards did in their chart recently. And, you know, I mean, mostly okay. You know, definitely some properties that we didn't want to go up in price, and some properties went down in price. So again, if you're a treasure hunter, if you're a value junkie, there's probably some value to look at certain Daily Getaway deals. We'll certainly be talking about as many of them as possible on my blog, Pizza in Motion, and we'll also be covering some of the best ones here on the podcast as well. With all that housekeeping done, let's bring Summer onto the show to talk about her family's first Disney cruise. Back on the Miles to Go podcast with Summer Hull from TPG Family. Summer, good to have you back on the podcast.
So great to be here. Thank you, Ed.
One of my favorite folks to podcast with, and she and I don't get to do this enough, although we do get to gab about travel here and there. So we're just going to try and do more of that gabbing while there's a recording going.
Sounds like an amazing double task. Love it.
I think this is a great idea. So let me set the table for folks. We had talked about doing a podcast segment. It turns out that completely separate from each other, Summer and I booked the exact same Disney cruise on different weeks. And so my family has cruised a whole bunch, and this was the first cruise for her family. So I thought we could have some fun doing a quick segment. We were trying to come up with the, you know, like, what are the five things you tell a first-time Disney cruiser? And we just realized that neither one of us would stick to whatever the number was. So we just figured we'd get on and talk about, hey, you know, Summer, I'm going to be on this cruise in a few weeks as a first-time Disney cruiser myself, but having been on other cruise ships, and first time cruiser for your family, you know, let's go through some things that that you think folks should know before they hop on a Disney cruise.
Okay, so I have a lot of ways we were surprised on our
yeah, like most things, Disney requires a lot of planning.
Oh my God, it does. But also, like, if you're also brand new to cruising like we are, there was just some surprises. So I'll mention those quickly that you don't need to know, but maybe somebody listening is new to cruising.
For sure.
So a couple things about cruising in general that shocked us, or shocked me, was that you feel the ocean. Y'all can all laugh at me now, but I totally thought on these massive cruise ships that unless there was waves you could really see with your visible eye, like, you weren't gonna really feel that you were on the ocean. I was wrong. So wrong.
Well, where were you guys on the ship? Were you up high, down low, near the front, near the back?
So we were relatively high and toward the back. But wherever I was on the ship, this was true for me. But as we know, if anyone's ever heard us talk about our riding all the rides at Disney, and I got sick multiple times on that, I might be slightly more predisposed to feeling these things than some other people.
That is true. That is true. I will say, for folks who are first-time cruisers, the back of the ship can tend to be a little bit bumpier than, say, the middle of the ship.
Yeah. So there was that. We got through it. Like, I guess, you know, they say getting your sea legs, and that did happen. So wasn't a deal breaker, but was surprising to all of us that first day. Another one is that I, again, stupidly assumed that there would be downtime on the cruise, and I really thought we would just be, like, lounging about and reading books. And that was so stupid. I know.
I just love it. No, because you can do that. I just love the way you said it, because I think, you know, for a short cruise like you did, you sort of feel like you need to keep moving.
That's exactly it, I think. And you're doing the same cruise. And Disney specifically, there is just so much going on that you feel like you are missing out on if you aren't doing it. So, I mean, I'm sure we could have sat in our room and stared out the veranda for 3 days. But there was no way that was going to happen with everything that was going on the ship. So if you want to maximize what is available on the ship and you want to sit on the veranda and read your book, then a 3-night cruise is far too short.
Yeah, I would agree. Did you guys get off the ship in the Bahamas?
Great question. So the 3-night Disney cruise we did and that Ed's doing stopped in Nassau and at Disney's private island, Castaway Key, which looks like Castaway K, but they swear it's Key, whatever. We did not get off at Nassau because we've been there before and we'd never been on a Disney cruise. So we wanted to take advantage of all the stuff on the ship. So the only day we got off was at their private island.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're going to do. But I certainly understand that for folks who may not cruise a lot, maybe first timers are going to want to get off. I guess, you know, let's talk about what was it like on the ship during the port call in the Bahamas. So what sort of things did you do? What were the crowds like for folks who may be deciding whether they want to get off the ship in the Bahamas or not?
I mean, we saw people getting off the ship. So people definitely got off the ship. But there's thousands of people on the ship normally. And I think there was still thousands of people on the ship the day we were at Nassau, even though I know some people got off. I don't think that because maybe the sailing was so short, I think there was a lot of families doing exactly what we're doing and they stayed on the ship. So the pools were still busy. There was still a 30-minute line for the slide. We did spend a chunk of that day at the spa, which was great. And our kids were at the kids club. So, you know, I don't really know what the ship was doing during those 2 hours, but most of the time, the ship was still pretty busy during the day at Nassau.
Did you book your spa appointment ahead of time or did you book it when you were on the ship?
We did. That's one of the very few things we were able to book ahead of time. As first time Disney cruisers, we're at the bottom of their totem pole in terms of advanced booking.
Yeah.
Even if you'd only been once before, you could book everything basically further in advance. So we were able to get spa appointments on the day we were in port. But that's one of the few things we were able to get. We weren't able to get into the nice restaurants. We weren't able to get a cabana at the private island. We did book princess greetings, which was really fun and easy, but those were the only really things still available that we wanted.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure about the cabanas just because of how pricey they were. Certainly it looked awesome, but and don't quote me on this, but I think it was in the neighborhood of like $600.
It is. And frankly, unless you get lucky, I don't think a first-time Disney cruiser is going to be able to grab one based on what I've learned and experienced. There's, say, 20 of those cabanas on their private island, and there's thousands of cruisers. So I don't think your odds are good, even if you were willing to spend the money. But I'll tell you this, that's the one thing that we really regret about the cruise was not having one, because I did not love our day at their private island like I thought I would. There was just a lot of squabbling about beach chairs, just way more than you would expect. And not just from one isolated group. I heard it happening in different parts with different groups. So I think that it would have been nice to have a slightly less crowded part of the beach and to have a space that was undeniably ours. I mean, a Disney cruise is expensive no matter what you do. So if you're going to significantly enhance the 3 days by spending one of the 3 days in your own private cabana, I think it's probably worth it, especially if you don't love being right next to a lot of other people. So I would absolutely book a cabana had one been available.
Yeah, and it does seem like there's not a lot given how many total people there are in the ship. So I would imagine it's a tough get. You know, we've done some of the private islands for other cruises before, and in some cases have, you know, decided to stay on the ship and just do stuff. I will say, you know, Royal Caribbean's taking sort of a different angle on this going forward, in that they're building essentially a water park on their private island along with a bunch of other stuff. And so, you know, I mean, I'm not sure from our family if we'll go to the beach or not when we go to Castaway Key, or if we'll, you know, bike ride or something else. But, those days where you're at the private islands of other cruise lines that I've done, I kind of feel like that's a good day to stay on the ship.
Yeah, I think it would have been way less crowded that day on the ship than the Nassau day.
And were you off the ship pretty much the whole day?
We were off the ship, you know, from maybe say 9 to 2.
Mm-hmm.
And the bike ride was really fun. There were a lot of bug bites. God, I'm selling this great, aren't I? I mean, we truly did have a good time, but but I'm a bug magnet. And so I personally got a ton of bug bites even while I was actively pedaling around the island. So definitely don't skip the bug spray station. They do have one of those. But bugs aside, the bike ride was really, really cool. We did it first thing before it got hot. If you're into running, jogging, or walking, there was a 5K on the island. An included / free 5K with a medal that looked cool if you're into that sort of thing. And lunch on the private island was really good. So getting off to go to lunch, I'd recommend that.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, the beach part I might have skipped if we did that cruise again. But most people love that stop. They want to go twice in the same cruise. So we may have just had an off day.
Well, I think I'll be able to give a competing example here in just a few weeks.
I think that'll be fantastic.
So what else? What are some of the other things that you guys did on the ship? Did you go the show route? Did you do activities?
We ate a lot. I mean, universally, yeah. I heard that the food on Disney Cruise is really good, and I have no cruise to compare it to, but I would agree. I mean, most of the food we had was in the range of good to really good, with few exceptions, and there's plenty of options. So we did not do any of the buy-up restaurant dining opportunities. So we ate at the 3 onboard restaurants. They rotate you through them each night. And we liked all of them. I think Animator's Palette was probably our least favorite of the three, but we liked all of them, and the menu was different. I think I ate half the ocean. Like, I'm really sorry, Nemo, but I mean, they had so much seafood, really good seafood.
Yeah.
And so that would be what I gravitated toward, you know, at least 2 meals a day. We did see 2 of the 3 evening shows, and they were also both high quality. I mean, my 3-year-old was entertained and my husband was entertained. And, you know, me and the 9-year-old were easy to entertain, but they were very well done. They were what you would expect from a Disney Broadway show. And we did the pirate thing one night too. They have a big pirate party.
Yes, I've heard about that. Yeah.
That was cool. I think, you know, having a 9 and a 3-year-old, some of their stuff that happens after the nighttime show was really kind of too late for us. So, I mean, there was like a really cool pajama party in the kids club that was just way too late for us. And a lot of the pirate stuff was, my kids were falling asleep on me, but it was fun. You just got to let yourself like join the Disney insanity while you're on the cruise ship.
Yeah. And I have heard that from other folks I know who have cruised both like Royal or Norwegian and Disney, that the shows are much better on Disney. From a food perspective, I've heard the same thing as well, though I will say I do think that the gap has closed quite a bit, in that the food is better on the lesser lines, if you will. I still think Disney probably leads the pack there, but the gap probably isn't as big.
Yeah, and you know, just to be picky, anyone getting on a Disney cruise, the dinners were exceptional. I found the buffet to be better than expected. It's kind of on par, I think, with like, say, a buffet at the Bellagio, like a good buffet. but the food that wasn't quite as impressive, if we're being picky, were the breakfast. I knew that room service was included. And the breakfast is the weakest of the menu items for room service. It's all just cold continental items. So, I mean, yes, they will bring coffee and a muffin to your room, but they won't bring all that much beyond that. And the poolside restaurants were, you know, I mean, the theme park food. So the kids were happy, but don't expect too much beyond that at lunch. But that's okay, because then you have more room for the really good dinners.
All right, so in wrap up, any other last takeaways from the ship? I guess let's start with the easy one, which is, would you cruise on Disney again?
Yeah, so we put a deposit down on our next Disney cruise, which I didn't think we would do. I really thought this was a check-the-box item for a while. But you get 10% off your next Disney cruise if you put a deposit down while you're on your current Disney cruise. And you don't have to pick which one you're doing. You can do any in the next 2 years and still get the discount. So for $250 down, which is also refundable, I believe, we have said we're going to do it again. So I think that we will. I don't know which one yet, though. We're debating. We did have two rooms. We had connecting staterooms, even though we're just a family of four. And I think that was money well spent. It does not double your cost to do that. It increased it, of course, but only by, say, 50%, not 100%. And for us, that extra space and the extra bathroom was worth it. We never swam on the ship, which was a surprise to us, but the pools were just beyond overcrowded on this short cruise. But it was still fun. It's one of those trips you don't have to micro plan everything. You can just, you know, maybe book something in advance, but largely just get on the ship and let it, you know, go where it takes you. And that's a really, really cool type of vacation in this busy phase of life.
Yeah, I hear you. And I guess one last question, and I know this is probably a little bit harder to answer, but I like that you'll be honest because you don't have anything else to compare it to. Given that you've cruised once and now it's on Disney, which arguably is one of the best, if not the best, for cruising with younger kids, what would it take for you to go cruise on, say, Royal Caribbean or Norwegian or somebody like that? Are you at this point a Disney cruising family, or are you open to trying a different line?
Great question. Complicated answer. I mean, I've had access to free cruises through like status with M Life in Las Vegas in the past, and probably even still, and I haven't taken them. So unless somebody was really convincing me that a certain cruise line was at least as good as Disney, I would not do anything lesser than Disney. Because I think we're marginal cruisers still. We're not just cruiser bust family. So I certainly wouldn't want to take a step down.
Right.
That said, Josh has indicated he'd be interested in a cruise with a casino without kids. So if we ever went that route, then maybe we would try a different line. But it would have to be what someone convinced me would be one of the best lines. But with kids, I don't see us moving off Disney. They love the kids club so much. And that was so clutch to us being able to sort of relax for a minute and enjoy our meal, because the kids would go there halfway through. So I wouldn't want to risk unless I just knew I was going to something at least as good.
No, I think that's fair. And I think it's a great perspective for somebody who hasn't cruised before. You started with the best, and you know, Royal's different. I mean, certainly there are things that aren't as good, but again, I think a lot depends on what you're going to do. And I certainly think you're safe on a Disney cruise knowing what sort of level of quality you're going to get.
Yeah, but maybe for an adult trip on some fancy new ship with a casino, maybe. Not ruling it out.
For sure. Well, awesome. Summer, thanks again for being on with us and sharing your views on the cruise. I will absolutely share my feedback with you when we get back and we can compare notes.
I would love that. I can't wait to hear what you think about it.
For sure. So when you're not hopping on here with me or hopping on cruise ships with the family, tell folks where they can find you.
Definitely. You can find me on Twitter at Mommy Points, M-O-M-M-Y Points. And you can find me on The Points Guy. I run TPG Family. And you can get there by just typing mommypoints.com into your browser.
Thanks again, Summer. Safe travels.
Thanks, Ed.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. This week's show is brought to you in part by AutoSlash. AutoSlash does one thing really, really well. They save you money on car rentals, and not just a little bit. They're always free to use, and there's two separate ways that they can help save you money. First off, if you start your booking process at autoslash.com, you'll enter in some key information, you know, Costco membership, AAA, frequent flyer memberships, and they'll take all that information along with searching for any publicly available codes that you might not be aware of, and they'll find the best price for your specific car rental, which you can then go ahead and book. After you've booked, you can enter your car rental reservation into their tracking tool, and it will continue to track whether the price has gone down on your car rental or a new code becomes available that would save you more money. They'll notify you, and you'll be given the chance to rebook that reservation for less money. even if you don't start the booking process with autoslash.com, if you booked it somewhere else, you could take your reservation number, key it into Autoslash, and they will continue to track that reservation for free and let you know if the price goes down or if there's a discount code maybe you didn't know about right up until you pick the car up. Tons of different ways to save money with Autoslash. It's 100% free, always 100% free. Give it a try and drop me an email. Let me know what you think about it. You can find them at autoslash.com. Back on the Miles to Go podcast, and as we get into summer, it's time to find out if all the hotel chains are going to continue to offer promos. First up was Hilton, and they've announced their promo to run consecutively right after their earlier promo ends. And it sounds similar to some other ones, but we'll dig into a little bit more detail on that with Jen from Deals We Like, who's back on the podcast again this week. Hey, Jen.
Hi, Ed. How are you?
I am doing good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
So Hilton's back with another double points promo, and they have a couple of small hooks in here for folks who are hardcore road warriors. Let's talk a little bit about what Hilton's got on offer.
Sure. So as you were mentioning, Hilton's back for like what seems to be their 100th time of offering their double points promotion, which is great. I kind of like that. You know what you're getting with Hilton. It's kind of consistent. The day the promotion currently ends, the next day it starts, so you're not missing a day or anything with this promotion. I like that. Many other hotel chains, you know, you have to wait like 6 weeks, maybe even 3 months for a new promo to be offered. So it's pretty good. The difference, though, with this promotion is that, first of all, it doesn't start until your second stay. So that's one, I would say, annoying thing. And if you have a very expensive stay coming up, you might actually want to consider a mattress run to kind of get that single night stay out of the way. So let's say you have a stay that's like costing you $1,000, you know, a big family vacation or something, and you want the double points. It might be worthwhile to find like a $49 hotel somewhere nearby, check in and out, not even actually stay, or enjoy the pool if you want, and to get that first night. And so then you'll get that second stay points available for an expensive upcoming stay. So that's one thing to keep in mind. And secondly, on top of the double points, they do have different stay thresholds. So if you say 10 stays, 15 stays, or 20 stays, you'll earn 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 bonus points, which is a lot. I feel like with Hilton, usually it's based on nights and not stays. So that's one thing to keep in mind. This is per stay, not nights. And that's a lot to get. I think it is aggressive.
I think so, too. I mean, you're talking about hardcore, road warrior travel sort of there. So you're covering beginning of May through September. So, mm-hmm. You're covering essentially, 12 travel weeks, if you will, maybe 13 or 14. I'd have to go do the math and see how the weeks break down from a business traveler standpoint, which you used to be as well. And so, yep. I mean, to say that you're going to be on the road every week during that time period is thin, especially because you're talking about the summer travel season. So I think, hitting a 15th or a 20th stay on this promo is going to be difficult for most people. I'm glad to see the hooks in there for the business travelers, but I mean, it's really just for very hardcore business travelers.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things, if they just announced double points, everyone would have been happy. So to say that now you can, some folks might get those additional points, that's just,
Yeah.
That's a nice add-on. So it's great. No big deal. And if you can get it, great. I mean, I did travel for many, many years on business. And for two of those years, I did hotel hop every single night.
Sure.
to get at that time, the promotions were way better and worthwhile hotel hopping. I don't think I would do that for this. But, at that time, it was like the free night stays after, yeah. I think, three stays. So every week I was getting a free night stay that you could use at the Maldives. You're not going to get that here. So I don't think it would be worth it to hotel hop. But if you happen to be hotel hopping just based on where your business travel might bring you throughout the week, that's a great add-on.
Yeah, I don't know that I would hop for this one either, but I do like that the hooks are in there for folks who travel more. As you mentioned earlier, I'm a bit annoyed that they've picked up the old SPG habit of not paying points on the first day. Because I think it's just, I don't know. I understand they're trying to find ways to maximize their value here, but I mean, if the goal is to earn points, or to attract folks to earn points to move business over, that's a bigger hurdle to overcome.
Right, and I agree. It is frustrating because I do believe this is the first time they've done that.
Yeah, I don't remember them doing that in the past either. So we'll hope it's a one-time thing, but I don't know.
Yeah, probably not, but it is what it is. But I do want to remind you all, make sure to register. So some of the other hotel chains, you just have to register by a certain date, and then all prior stays will still count. With Hilton, it's always the same. It's the same it's always been. You must register prior to actually checking out for your hotel if you want that particular stay to count. So even if you have no idea whether or not you're going to stay at a Hilton, even if you've never traveled before, just register. It doesn't hurt. It takes an extra, 20 seconds. So then you won't be upset later on when you realize you don't get the points.
Yep. No, definitely something to worry about. Make sure you always register for those promos early because you never know when your plans are going to change. Get it out of the way now before you forget.
Yep.
Jen, thanks a bunch for being on and talking Hilton. We'll stay tuned for the hopeful other promos that are to come for the summer for the other hotel chains.
Absolutely. Fingers crossed they're good, but I don't know. We'll see.
Fingers crossed that we'll actually even have promos.
That's right. If not, then Hilton will definitely be the best promo for the summer.
Yep. All right. Well, tell folks where they can find you when you're not hopping on the podcast with me.
You all can find me at my blog, dealswelike.com, and via any social media channels, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, everything at dealswelike. And feel free to send me a note with any questions you might have.
Thanks, Jen. Safe travels.
Thanks. You too.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Back to wrap up this week's show with the final two pennies. And it's a reminder that you should always read the terms and conditions when you're applying for credit cards. Yes, I know this sounds obvious. But as a guy who knows, quite a bit about travel and credit cards, I made this mistake recently and end up with the wrong fit for a new credit card. Tiffany Funk from 1 Mile at a Time was on with us a couple months ago, and she was talking about how I needed to revise my credit card spending strategies because my Starwood Amex cards were no longer as valuable as they used to be. And she's absolutely right, which is why I dropped an American Express card, a standard American Express card, into my portfolio for the first time in probably 15 years. I chose the American Express Platinum card, and since I do a bunch of business travel, I applied for the business version of the American Express Platinum card. I did that because I thought that the 5X on airfare was a pretty decent benefit for me, and I also thought that the Uber credits would be valuable. The personal version of the Platinum card gives you Uber savings throughout the course of the year. Well, unfortunately for me, because I didn't read closely enough, the Uber benefit is one that's reserved for the personal card. I applied for the business card. And the 5X points on airfare, well, that benefit's slightly different for the personal card and the business card. On the personal card, it's for travel booked directly with an airline or through American Express Travel, who has their own website. On the business card, it's only if booked through Amex Travel. And I don't know how I feel about booking through their site. I haven't tried it yet, admittedly, but I do like the fact that some of the airlines I travel most frequently, United, Southwest, have websites that make it, sorry, have apps that make it very easy to book a ticket with them. Not a lot of friction there. And if I'm booking something that's a complicated itinerary, not really the sort of thing that I want to you have to work through somebody else for changes. I would rather just be able to talk directly with the airline that I'm booking. That's my personal preference. Maybe I'll find out that Amex Travel is just fine and won't cause me any problems. Certainly would love to hear everybody's feedback here if they have any experience booking airline tickets through Amex Travel. But the bottom line here is I ended up with the wrong card because I was in a hurry to apply and get the card and earn that juicy sign-up bonus. And now I might be stuck with a card that doesn't really have a great fit in my wallet. So guess we'll see what happens with that. That's a full wrap on this week's episode. It's a good reminder to make sure that you're checking the terms and conditions before you apply for something. If you're enjoying the show, I hope you'll take a moment and share it with a friend. You can shoot us your questions or suggestions for future episodes to me via email, ed@pizzainmotion.com. You can find me on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all at Pizza in motion. A big thanks to Jen and Summer for a great show this week. I loved talking cruises and Hilton Honors with both of them. And a thanks to Mike for producing our show, getting it all wrapped up for this week. Next week, we've got some fun stuff coming your way. Leslie will be back from Trips with Tykes to talk about the Disney Resort in Hawaii, Aulani. And good gosh, I hope I'm finally pronouncing that correctly. That's a full wrap on this week's episode. Until next week, we've got miles to go.